CNN Radio, I'm Paul Chambers. Details are filtering out about the much-anticipated Republican budget for 2012. CNN's Matt Cherry reports all will be revealed later this week.
The plan from House Budget Chairman Paul Ryan involves a major overhaul of Medicare. Starting 10 years from now, Americans would no longer enroll in the program. People would instead get vouchers for private insurance. Anyone 55 or older now wouldn't be affected. Ryan's plan also calls for deep cuts in Medicaid, as much as $1 trillion worth. GOP sources tell CNN there are no major changes to Social Security. Ryan's expected to give specifics Tuesday on how much discretionary spending would be cut. Matt Cherry, CNN.
An attempt to plug a leak of highly radioactive water at a Japanese power plant has failed. Japan's chief cabinet secretary, Yukio Edano, says the surrounding area is being closely monitored.
We are currently in the process of measuring the radiation levels in the soil and atmosphere, and a comprehensive analysis is underway.
Workers attempted to plug the leak at the Daiichi plant with concrete, and now they're trying polymers. The death toll in the massive earthquake is over 12,000, with 15,000 people still missing. The Midwest and Plains states could be in for some rough going today. CNN meteorologist Chad Myers says some severe weather is expected to stir things up.
Chicago, Kansas City, Quad Cities, all the way down even to Oklahoma. Tornadoes, damaging winds, and yes, large hail. Hail big enough to put some dents in cars, maybe even break windows. And then it charges into Arkansas. You have to realize that this is an event that keeps going.
A wildfire near Fort Collins, Colorado, has forced the evacuation of over 300 homes. Authorities are hopeful the weather may cooperate with today's firefighting efforts. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Live from Progressive.
Let's take another call.
Hey, Flo, ever wonder if you offer too many discounts?
Never. Homeowners, Safe Driver, Snapshot, Pay in Full. Right now we offer more discounts than ever.
Doesn't that seem a bit excessive?
Wait, is this Bill and Tom from another insurance company?
Hang up.
Busted.
Getting you all the discounts you deserve. Now that's Progressive. Call or click today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Intuit Small Business presents Payroll in 30 seconds. Just type employee hours into Intuit Online Payroll. Wages and taxes are calculated automatically. A few more clicks to print paychecks or make a direct deposit, and we're done. In our remaining time, here's a flock of pigeons playing ragtime piano with their beaks. Try Intuit Online Payroll free for 30 days at Intuit.com. We do the legwork so you can do what you love. Intuit. Small business rejoice.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us on Sunday, April 3rd. We'll have Washington Post food editor in, Joe Yonan. He's talking about his new book called Serving One. And you cheese lovers out there, Tucker Yoder from the Clifton Inn. He's the fromagier there.
So we got Yoder and Yonan on Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You are listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Mike Mannion. We're broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Marion Egge of the Bank of America and Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation. We have a great lineup of guests for you today, including Jim Corcoran. Jim is the president and CEO of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. Katie Moran. Katie is the vice president, she's the founder of PerformTech and vice president of General Physics. We've also got Mickey Williams on the show. Mickey's the president and CEO of CapRelo. And finally, Brian Callahan, president and CEO of Segway Technologies. But first, let me introduce you to Jim Corcoran. Jim is the president and CEO of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. Jim, tell us a little something about the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce.
Thanks, Mike, and how are you today? The Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce, we are the largest chamber of commerce in the state of Virginia outside of the state chamber. We are lucky to be here in Fairfax County, one of the best places to live and work in the entire United States. It's a very well-to-do area here, and we're lucky. We have a lot of Fortune 500 companies headquartered here, and we service businesses of all sizes. But we provide access to businesses. We provide access to other businesses. We provide access to government leaders, both elected and appointed. And we provide access to educators and community partners in the Fairfax County area.
Now, Jim, you've been doing this work for decades and decades here at the Chamber. Is that right?
Actually, no, not at all. I just celebrated my one-year anniversary this week.
Mike. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, why did they pick you for such an important chamber?
Mike, I've been in the business development arena my whole career. Started off in sales and marketing positions in consumer products, but served the last 14 years before coming here a year ago with the Chocolate Manufacturers and National Confectioners Association as the Vice President of Trade Development. And so there you hear, you know, I was selling products and selling services, and I can deliver on business development.
Well, there's a lot of people out there who have a strong BD background. Why did they trust you?
I have a proven track record, number one, and I think they trusted me because I had some visions as to where we could go as a chamber.
What was it about the chamber that was so attractive to you that compelled you to become the president and CEO?
Well, think about it. You have the Chamber of Commerce, number one, which has a great reputation as being a business advocacy organization, no matter where you are with a Chamber of Commerce. Number two, it's Fairfax County, Virginia, USA. There's not a faster growing area with more promising businesses moving into the area than Fairfax County, Virginia. Who wouldn't want this job?
Are you from this area?
No, I'm originally from Philadelphia. Came down here 15 years ago.
Well, tell us about growing up in Philly.
Philadelphia was a great place to grow up. I moved from the city of Philadelphia out to suburbia when I was 10 years old. So I saw both the inner city and suburbia there. Graduate of St. Joseph's University, the Hawks up in Philadelphia. And spent a little bit of time up in New York, then back to Philadelphia, and then down here to the Northern Virginia area.
So you lived in one of those really expensive gated communities out in the suburbs?
No, not at all. I was almost living on a farm, actually.
Really?
When we moved out there in 1968.
What was that like?
It was interesting. Coming from the inner city to an acre and a half of land, and really set me on my ways in a lot of ways when I look back over my life.
Well, in your mind, what were the pros and what were the cons of making the move from the city out to the country?
There was a lot of things going on in the United States in the big cities back in the late 1960s, and a lot of families had that goal to move their families out of the inner city. My parents, not unlike a lot of others, did that. But it really set me on a way to, I think, being able to focus more on education, which I've benefited tremendously from over that time. But it also got me very involved in, believe it or not, my love of golf. I got introduced to golf through caddying. You know, my parents were salt of the earth, blue-collar people, and they believed in work. So,
How old were you when you became a caddy?
10.
10 years old?
10 years old.
And you started caddying for the next 10 years?
Actually, you know what? I caddied, certainly. I never had a job where I collected a paycheck until I was 21 because I like making cash.
So
I always had cash in my pocket.
Why was this caddying such a game changer for you?
Well, number one, it was a huge time occupier when you look at that. So my parents knew I was out of trouble. You had a lot of babysitters if you're at a private golf club doing this. But it was a game changer for me because it introduced me to a whole different world than I had seen before.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
I mean, well, you know,
and why did people want you as a caddy versus everybody else?
Well, for a lot of reasons. I think I was a very good consultant to them, but I actually ended up being a very good golfer. I ended up playing college golf, obviously high school golf, and then college golf. So in most cases, they knew that I was a better golfer than they were, so it was one of the reasons they would ask for me.
So you were a 10-year-old consultant?
Probably not 10 years old, probably 13, 14, 15 years old, though, at that time.
Was it ever intimidating being in that world of more well-to-do people and they were all older?
No, it was really very natural. You know, we did live in the community, so it wasn't as though these people were living in a different world than us. But it was something I could see the benefits of education. I could see these entrepreneurs at work, professionals, whether they be doctors, lawyers, or business owners that we were caddying for.
What did your dad and your mom, but particularly your dad, think as you started to move up the social strata, if you will, out of the blue collar into a more white collar, professional, educated society?
I think as you know, any parents are proud to see their children succeed, and I think in their eyes, we were succeeding. And you know, my parents weren't fortunate enough to go to college; they were just of a different era, and just getting through high school. Some of their siblings did not get through high school, so education was very, very important to them, and they set us up to succeed, but they also taught us the benefit of doing it for ourselves. I played college golf, but I paid my own college tuition. My brother paid his own college tuition. So it was, you know, when I say that we were making cash, we were saving that cash too. So we invested in our own education.
So Jim, where'd you go from there? You said, after your golf days, you did go to college, you paid for your own way through college, and then what?
Well, I ended up in New York selling canned fruits and vegetables, working for the Del Monte Company. And I was lucky. I had some successes up there and got promoted through the ranks to a couple levels of management up. And then I changed to Borden. So I have a background in consumer product sales and marketing. And then I was really fortunate. I was hired to a company, Richardson Brands, in Philadelphia. It was a small regional company, and the owner there liked me enough to offer me a minority position of the company. That was really an interesting in that area, and that really showed me the importance of hands-on experience in the entrepreneurial world. When we sold that is when I entered into the association community.
Jim, you obviously very successful, starting at age 10 as a caddy, and now you're running the Chamber of Commerce. What does your blue-collar mother and father think of the success that you've had? What do they say to you?
Well, I'm one of six kids. So, you know, it's hard to, you know, I don't think they would sit there and say, hey, Jim, you're more successful than the other five. I think we have been so fortunate. My brothers and sisters, you know, we've all done pretty well.
Is your dad and mom proud of you?
Very much so. My dad's no longer here.
Sorry to hear that.
But, yes.
What do you think he'd say to you today if he was here? After all the success you've had.
You did good, Jim.
That's great. Wonderful. And is your mom still with you today?
Yes.
She's great. So obviously she sees your success every day.
Is there any of the inner city still inside of you that sort of comes out in the way you do business or the way you run your life?
I think so. You know, it's kind of interesting. You learn at every aspect of your life, right? And there are people, you know, when you go back to that inner city, there's a lot of kids that I knew from 10 years old that I still stay in touch with today. Families that stay together. We still get together at times. It might be for a golf outing. It might be to see each other's parents. But there's a nucleus there that still does get involved. But you know what? You hear about people that are street smart. You can take some of that away from you. You know, we talk about the caddying. You know, I learned a lot of things in the caddy yard that you take with you through life, too. So you're seeing the successful people, but you're also seeing the other caddies.
Jim, earlier on, you said, you know, when Mike asked you why the chamber hired you, you said because of the results that you deliver, the track record. Are you a results-oriented guy?
Absolutely. It's, you know what, I think it's easy to measure results. Where they are clearly identified both to me but also for my staff, and you know, I have a wonderful staff, it's really easy to see results.
What drives that? I mean, where does that come from growing up with six kids?
You know, I think with six kids, you kind of had to fend for yourself, right? And, you know, we talk about the importance of education, and, you know, the results are very measurable. So you know, in my mind today, it's very easy to measure those results. You'll see membership growth, you'll see sales growth, you'll see participation growth. And from the chamber's perspective, that's truly what we want. We want folks who join the chamber, yes, but it's more important about getting involved and utilizing the services that the chamber can offer.
Yeah. Jim, what would you say, in just a few words, is the mark you have left on this world?
Well, you know, I have three kids myself, and it's, you know, never settle for less than the best that you can deliver.
Okay. What's the website for the chamber?
The Fairfax County Chamber's website is www.fairfaxchamber.org.
We have been speaking with Jim Corcoran. Jim is the president and CEO of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank my guests, Marion Egge of the Bank of America, as well as Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation, for helping me structure the interviews, hopefully providing you with an interesting experience. Please stay tuned for our next interview, which will begin right after this important business spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Jennifer Trax.
Jennifer, who are you with?
I'm with RG, Wiltsey & Robinson.
And what is RG?
RG is a full-service public accounting firm, so we do assurance, tax, business consulting services for corporations, nonprofit organizations, and individuals.
There's a whole lot of accounting firms out there. What makes you guys different?
I truly believe, and it's said quite a bit, but I truly believe it is our people. We offer our people an opportunity for growth. We've got a culture of entrepreneurship. And because of that, people are really inspired to succeed, and that helps the firm succeed. A lot of firms say it, but we truly do offer our clients kind of the technical expertise of a big firm. More than two-thirds of our partners are Big Four, come from the Big Four, and I myself came from the Big Four. So I can say that the culture we have really is one of technical excellence. But yet it comes in a small firm package, and the touches that we give our clients are really second to none.
Speaking of touches, you give your employees a great work-life balance. Tell us about that.
We do. I think starting from the top with Paul Argie, he really knew that in order for us to succeed, we had to hire the best people. And in an area where we really live to work, unfortunately, we want to be able to inspire those people, motivate them, and allow them to succeed. And we know that they've got other lives. And so we have flexible work arrangements right from the top on down. I myself am on an arrangement where I don't work on a Friday.
And that was your 2-minute spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Marian Egge of the Bank of America and Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation. We have a returning guest today. Her name is Katie Moran. Katie is the founder of PerformTech and the vice president of General Physics. Katie, welcome, and tell us, what is PerformTech?
PerformTech is a custom training development company that works primarily in the federal sector. We provide instructional design and graphics and programming services to agencies that have a performance need that they're trying to fill, whether that's training people on a new skill or a new piece of software, or addressing a performance problem with people that are not doing the job they want them to do.
How big or small is PerformTech?
We have about 60 employees, and we've been in business since 1994, I was right the first time.
Right. And you're new to PerformTech, are you not?
I was one of the founders. I was there on October 1st when we started the company.
So tell us a little bit about founding PerformTech. Why did you do it?
My business partners, Emma and Richard, we were working for another company that had been acquired by a large defense contractor, and Suddenly, the small family-owned company that was very supportive of its employees had become part of a large conglomerate, and life was not nearly as much fun as it was. And we decided that we wanted to start a business that could provide good quality products to our customers as well as provide a good work environment for our staff.
I remember you talking about that from your previous interview. Tell us a little bit more about your heart for taking care of your employees and the values.
We feel that the training field in particular is got a very large female population of our clients are mostly women, and we believe that it's important to have a lot of women on our staff as well. And women have children and need to balance a family life and a work life. As my partner Emma and I both did, we raised our children while we owned PerformTech. So we wanted to provide a place that women could work at and realize that they could leave to go watch their child in a play in the afternoon and not feel they had to ask permission or to get black marks against them because they were taking time off.
Got it. Now, I'm looking at your business card here. It says PerformTech, but it also says General Physics. What is that all about?
In December of 2009, my partners and I decided it was time to sell to a company. We went through a whole acquisition process and decided that the people at General Physics was the ideal match. And they are a large publicly traded company with about 2,300 employees, global operations that specialize in training as well.
So your role has changed.
My role has changed and is evolving as we speak. I still run the business unit that is now called PerformTech, but I also am involved. I'm an officer of the corporation, and so I'm involved with the executives there, kind of looking at overall growth opportunities for the company.
Katie, how's that feel now? I mean, you were your own boss for a number of years, and mm-hmm. now you're really not. I mean, you're running the show, but you're not. And now, so has your identity changed? Are you an employee versus the owner? Are you punching in a time card now?
I do a timesheet every day. that is very different.
That's a change.
But at the same time, we were very careful in who we selected to sell the company to. So we selected General Physics because they felt strongly that they didn't want to change who we were. They felt that they valued our skills and our operating style and our management style, and they have left us very much alone, and they are looking to incorporate sort of our good values and principles. They're very compatible with theirs.
Very impressive. So let me back up for a little bit, because I kind of want to understand, you were an entrepreneur all your life, and that's how you started this? I mean, did you always know you were going to start a company?
I grew up in a family where my father started his own business, and interesting, my business partner, her father also started his own business. So I grew up in that whole concept of working for yourself. I did not always own my own company. I worked for the federal government for a while. I ran a nonprofit organization, but I think it was always in the back of my mind that I would be happiest in charge.
But that's not how your brothers grew up. Tell us a little bit about your brothers and that mm-hmm. dynamic.
I have two older brothers, and they are about 7 and 9 years older than I am. And they grew up in a household where my father went off to work every day for a large insurance company. My mother stayed home and took care of the kids. And they had a different relationship with my father because he was off working every day. He retired when he was 60 years old. I was 8 years old at the time, and he started his own company in our rec room in the basement. So by that time, they were pretty much on their way off to college, and I grew up having a business in the household. And it created a very different expectation for me.
So what was it like living this life of leisure and ease while your father was running his business?
I worked for him all the time. From the time I was about 8 years old, I did whatever jobs needed to be done, and it was my summer job all through high school and all through college. I didn't really have a choice about it, but I learned a lot.
Tell us about your friends.
It was interesting. My best friends also parents had their own business, and they spent their summers working for their fathers. And so we sort of didn't, none of us went to camp, none of us did of those things. We just worked every summer. And it was easy because you didn't have to go looking for a job. But at the same time, parents are a lot more demanding sometimes than employers are.
What was the relationship like with your brothers? I mean, they're older, they've left, and you're home now. Your father's got this business, it's growing. I mean, are you a competitive family or your siblings?
There's a certain amount of competition there. They considered I was a spoiled younger princess that had a lot more opportunities than they did. I used to retort that their dad was there and wasn't running a business full time, and their mother was there making cookies, which he never did once I was growing up. But at the same time, they valued the fact that I was growing up and I was competitive with them.
What are they doing now?
They're both attorneys. And
you didn't want to go that route?
I took the law boards and was thinking I was going to go to law school. I got higher scores than they did, and I realized that was enough. That's all I really needed to do.
There is competition in the
There
family.
Is a lot of competition in the family, yes.
And what's the relationship with your dad today?
Well, my father, unfortunately, he passed away in 1979.
Sorry to hear that.
But I was his little girl. And my mother was the one, I think, that had a lot of influence on my independence, probably more, because she had been an orphan, and she just raised me and my brothers, but me as a girl, I think it was different to take care of myself.
So just a bit more about your mother's influence on you. Tell me about that. I mean, what was...
My mother had a lot of adages and aphorisms, and that just always came out of her mouth. And I realized that they influenced me a lot when I thought about them as an adult. You can do anything you want if you try hard enough. Always, toughest thing in life is to live with yourself. So you've got to be true to yourself. And finally, you know, if you see an opportunity, make a decision and find a way.
So your mother was telling you these things. How old were you then?
From the time I can remember, that was just going in my ear.
You immediately embraced them and said,
I hated them when I was a child. But I find I'm saying them now to my children. So obviously it had an impact.
When did you know that you'd be a business owner?
At one point, when I was working for the federal government, I was waiting online to buy a lottery ticket, and somebody asked me, what would you do with the money? And what blurted out of my mouth without thinking was, I'd start my own business. I really don't know where that came from, but I think it'd always been in the back of my mind as the next good step for me to take. And this person said, well, you don't have to win the lottery to start your own business. And that kind of made me think that, yeah, that is something I should pursue.
So the very next day you started your business?
Not exactly, no. I think that happened probably about 5 years later, though, actually. It wasn't that long a distance apart.
Yeah. Why wait 5 years?
Well, at the time, I was in the federal government, and I had two very small children. I was given an opportunity to go to a company that I was familiar with, and I started there, but shortly after I started, they were acquired by that large company, and I was miserable, and I decided this is the best opportunity I'm going to have. I had some business partners that wanted to join me, and it was a good idea.
Katie, how did you find your business partners? How did you know that they were the right people?
I had worked with them before. My husband actually had introduced me to one of them. And my primary partner, Emma Lopez Sullivan, she and I are diametrically opposed politically, but we agree on just about everything else. And we have since I met her in 1986, and we've been working together on and off since then.
Hey, Katie, why keep going now you've sold this business? Why not get the sailboat and take off to the ocean?
I'm not sure I can stop doing things, quite honestly. And mm-hmm. So I have an employment agreement with General Physics. They have sort of indicated they'd like me to stay on. And I've realized that I've never worked in a large publicly traded company before. And there's a lot to learn there.
So you're not ready to shut down at all?
Not completely. I would like to cut back, maybe 3 or 4 days a week as opposed to 7, and travel some, spend a little bit more time with my husband and my kids.
When you sold your business to General mm-hmm. Physics, what was that like emotionally?
It was actually easier than I thought it would be, and a lot of people were concerned about that. And I've realized we made a really good choice, and people felt very much welcomed and at home. And so that would be my one concern is, what have I done to my staff? And I really felt that I found them a very good home for them to get more opportunities for growth and new challenges facing them.
When it comes time for you to leave, are you concerned about what the future holds for your staff, given that you won't be there anymore to take care of them?
We have really focused in the past 2 years about creating a senior management team that has taken over a lot of what my jobs were and Emma's jobs were before, and we have mentored them a lot. And so the things that are important, they know how important those are for the culture, and General Physics understands that as well and is working very hard to make sure that that doesn't change.
Katie, you're such a successful lady. Your dad and mom have passed, unfortunately. If they were here today, what do you think they would say about your success?
My mother would first comment on what I'm wearing to make sure I was dressed appropriately. And they would be proud that I was able to take care of myself, because that was very important to both my parents, to be able to take care of yourself no matter what happened.
Why was that?
My mother was an orphan. My father had gone to work when he was like 13 because his father died, and so they had been on their own their entire lives during difficult times, and that was the most important thing, is to be able to take care of yourself and your family.
Katie, would you give us the website for PerformTech, please?
www.performtech.com.
We have been speaking with Katie Moran. Katie's the founder of PerformTech. Katie's also the vice president of General Physics. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Marion Egge of the Bank of America, as well as Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleaders.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back after this important business spotlight. Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Arlen Feldman.
Arlen, who are you with?
I am the marketing manager of Washington Management Group and Fed Sources.
Two companies. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Washington Management Group provides GSA schedule consulting, and they are the parent company to Fed Sources, which is the leading market intelligence service provider.
Well, what is market intelligence services?
If you need to buy or sell to the federal government, we can help you do that. We help you succeed in the federal government.
Well, why is that important work that you do?
You know, it's very important in this industry because, obviously, with constricting budgets and people needing to use their time and energy effectively, we can help them provide that kind of service when they need to know more information about the specific opportunity or where they should, approach the government next. We can help them with that sort of intelligence and insight in the industry.
Now, why are you better than anybody else at doing this?
You know, we like to say that our service is really what makes us different. We provide a service to our clients, and they know they can call us with whatever questions they might have. We don't just give them a login to a database and say, okay, you're on your own. You know, we really have their back, and we really help them decide and help make these tough decisions and really help them grow and really tailor where they need to go with some of their time.
You in particular, Arlen, what do you love most about doing this?
You know, I love the company. I love being able to say that I work for an honest corporation. You know, I really admire some of the senior managers that I work with. I think they have a fabulous story in the government industry, and I like to know that I'm working with a great group of people that are helping a variety of people in this industry succeed.
In just a few words, what's a great company for you to work with?
We have a lot of partners, the Coalition for Government Procurement. They're a wonderful organization. You should check them out, too.
And give us your website, please, Arlen.
All right. WashMG and FedSources.com.
Thank you very much. That was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Mike Mannion, your host. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Marion Egge of the Bank of America and Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation. We are joined now by a gentleman named Mickey Williams. Mickey is the president and CEO of CapRelo. Mickey, what is CapRelo?
Organizations have relocation policies, and they hire us to administer the policies and help their transferees in the moving process and help manage their expenses.
So someone out there listening, they get the word that they're being relocated with their company to California. How does what you do touch their life?
We have a counselor inside our company that contacts the transferee and begins to walk them through the process of how that company or that government agency is going to help them through the process, and we walk them step by step through every single detail.
Okay. How big is CapRelo, Mickey?
As far as the industry is concerned, we're in the top 10 of the industry.
In Metro D.C. or nationally?
Nationally. Mm-hmm. Although we do business internationally, we don't have any metrics to tell us how large we are Worldwide.
Okay. And you've been with Capri Low for how long, Mickey?
A little over 8 years now.
Okay. And what brought you to Capri Low?
I was introduced to my partner who had started the business in 97. He, through a series of events, asked me to join his board, and I guess I was a little bit too vocal in how I thought the business should run, and he challenged me to come and help run it, so I joined in 2003.
So what was it about that challenge that had you salivating, and you said, all right, giddy up, let's go?
I had retired from a previous relocation business that I had sold to one of the large players. And during my retirement year, I had some interesting experiences that made me hungry to come back into the business and to influence some people's life to make things better.
Such as?
I like working on things that I can create value in, mm-hmm. and that benefits everyone that touches that endeavor or that business. Mm-hmm. And I like creating a business or anything that I touch and create lasting value.
And you did that for some denominations, did you not?
I did that for an organization that was owned by five Afro-American church denominations. And they had established an affinity program for their members. There was a company that was an organization that was managing this for them. And I was asked on several occasions to come in and consult with them on various components of the affinity program. I got really intrigued with the vision of the organization. This organization could benefit millions of members. I think the last time at the height they had 7 million members that could benefit from economic services that the affinity group could provide, but it also benefited the leadership of the church, the pastors of the church, because part of the profits went to retirement funds.
Mickey, what I want to know is, why did you get involved? Sounds like a great cause, no doubt, mm-hmm. but why did you do it?
It intrigues me to be able to use my knowledge and expertise to make things better for people. And I thought that by helping this organization, I could make things better for a lot of people. It was a personal feeling. It made me feel good to be able to contribute.
Yeah. Let's go back to your childhood for a moment. Is there something in your childhood that you could look back and say, aha, I got that caring and wanting to make a difference from this point in my life?
I think that really came from church life that I had. It also came from my mother, who was a kindergarten teacher and really loved children. She wanted to give back to children. She wanted to give back to the church, and I think I picked that up from her.
Yeah.
Have you always been are you a very spiritual person?
I would say I'm spiritual. Not necessarily religious, but very spiritual, yes.
So let me, we'll come back to that in a minute. Let me talk about this year off. I want to try to understand, you said there were events that occurred during that year off that impacted your decision to go back to work. And can you kind of just explain to me what were the influences that happened during that year to you that triggered that light bulb that said, I'm going to go back to work?
When I did retire and exit the business that I sold, I had three objectives in mind that I wanted to contribute. I wanted to contribute back to the industry and stay involved, and so I started working a little bit for the industry group. I wanted to learn more about what successful people did every day in their lives, and I had a cousin who was a role model, and I just picked his brain and followed him around for a bit, trying to figure out why he was so successful. And the other thing is I wanted to give back to this organization that had a tremendous vision that I had been working with. Not a lot but kind of part-time in the business I was in Denver. We were trying to help them. I was consulting, and I was brought into situations where they were asking my advice. I got a great feeling. I could see this huge vision of helping millions of people in the economic environment, in their religious environment, in their everyday life, and elevating themselves. And that really turned me on. That really gave me a passion. It said to me, I like creating something of value, something of very lasting value, that everybody this entity touches is going to come away with something more than before they touched the entity.
Wow. That's very powerful. If you, now going back to Mike's question, to growing up, and you talked about your mother and your spiritual upbringing, talk about your mother a little bit. I mean, how did she influence that thinking that you had?
Well, mother was very involved in what went on around her, very involved in the church, very involved in our schools, very involved with our lives. And she wanted to do something to constantly give back. You know, she enjoyed her life. She lived it to the fullest. And I always took that away from mother as to how much that people meant to her. You know, people mean a lot to me. Relationships are probably the most important thing to me. I have the relationships in business that I have, the relationships in trying to help, you know, in various ways. My team at work, that's the most important thing to me right now, is that team that I've worked with 30% of these people in two or three different companies, and now they're at Caprilo, you know, and providing value to everything that Caprilo touches.
What sort of things did you and your mom do together, especially as it related to helping people?
I think it was mostly through the church. She really focused most of her efforts on trying to reach out to people through the church. And she was ended up director of kindergarten when she finally retired. It's amazing to walk in her shoes for a bit out in the town where we grew up. There's three generations of people that called her Mama Ree. You know, that's quite an influence. They were five-year-old kids that would run up to her when we were out in the mall and say, you know, Mama Ree, Mama Ree. And then there were adults older than me and my age that had children. Some of my friends had children and grandchildren that Mama Ree took care of.
When Mama Ree passed away, what was that memorial service like back home?
Just to say, it was very well attended in a church that had a congregation every Sunday of 1,000 people that filled the auditorium. The auditorium was pretty well filled.
Was she the biggest influence in your life?
It's hard to say that she was the biggest influence. She was a big influence. My dad was also a huge influence. I think Dad gave me my entrepreneurial spirit.
How so?
I grew up, you know, we grew up in a kind of a small house, and he worked for a company, and he also had a side business, and he kind of ran the side business out of my room. And so I can remember waking up on Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. and seeing him at his desk, working on something, getting prepared for something he was going to do that day with one of his customers on the outside. So.
With those kind of influences, what did you think you were going to do someday when you grew up?
Well, I knew immediately, very young, that I would do something in business. And as I grew a little bit older, Dad was also an Army veteran, and he was in the National Guard. He retired from the National Guard. I knew I wanted to go to the military. He about freaked out when I told him I was going to Marine Corps OCS.
Why?
Well, he asked me one question. He said, do you know the life expectancy of a Marine second lieutenant in battle? And I, quite honestly, I didn't. And he said, well, it's about 2 seconds. but after some initial pushback, he was my biggest supporter. I think he was the proudest of me during that time.
That's fantastic, Mickey. Mickey, what is the website for Cap Relo?
www.caprelo.com.
We've been speaking with Mickey Williams. Mickey is the president and CEO of Cap Relo. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Marian Egge of the Bank of America, as well as Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And we will be right back after this important
business
spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul from the Potomac Companies bringing you your business spotlight. Joining us today is
Adele Sears.
And Adele, what company are you with?
Epic Media Relations.
Epic Media Relations. That sounds big. What do you do?
We're a full-service boutique PR firm, and we like to say we offer PR, marketing, and a touch of magic for our clients.
Full-service PR boutique.
That's right.
Translate that.
Essentially, we focus on understanding people, what makes them believe in a brand, an organization, a product. For example, we know that through studies, women are more likely to influence other women, and men are more likely to influence other men, but through nonverbal communication. So men like emails, and women like person-to-person conversations.
Interesting. So you use that to help a company with their marketing strategies?
Pretty much. We understand people, and therefore we understand how to get in front of the right people, influence stakeholders, garner visibility, and build brands.
So who would be a typical client for you? What
well,
type of people,
it could
companies?
Be anywhere from DuPont, who's trying to increase the visibility for DuPont Corian, which is a countertop offering that they have.
And the women influence that one in the kitchen.
Right, exactly, exactly. So a consumer-based business like that. We also have a nonprofit organization that works with interns. And they were looking to become the go-to source for interns in Washington, D.C. And so we created an Intern Appreciation Week, and we got called Interns Rock. And we had MTV and area business development organizations, museums, restaurants offer discounts to interns for a week, and it was hugely successful.
Sounds like a fun place to work. What's the website? How do people reach you?
www.epicmediarelations.com.
Epicmediarelations.com. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank
this
you.
Has been Paul Smith. It is Paul Smith with the Potomac Companies with your business spotlight. Have a great day.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast live from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. I'm your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-host, Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation. And we are about to speak with a gentleman by the name of Brian Callahan. Brian is the president and CEO of Segway Technologies. Brian, what is Segway Technologies?
Well, Mike, first of all, let me just thank you for inviting me here today. I'm happy to be here. Segway is an information technology company. We provide information technology solutions in a number of different areas: information management, software development, web and mobile applications, information assurance. About 80% of our work is in the federal government, DOD space, and the other 20% or so is commercial nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. How big or small is Segway Technologies?
We've got about 75 employees right now. We're headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. We have an office up in Dayton, Ohio, and we also have folks working out on the West Coast in California.
And you were one of their most recent hires, is that correct?
I've been with the company since its founding in 1997.
In fact, you were hire or employee number what?
Employee number one. I think that's still in there on my employee number. Yeah, I had worked with a couple gentlemen at a previous company, and they founded Segway and brought me on board really on day one as, you know, the first employee.
Why you? And don't tell us about your technical background, because we know you don't have one, but why you?
Well, I had worked with one gentleman in particular, and he and I had worked on a project together, had built up a trust relationship there. And I think he knew, given my background, that I wasn't going to melt in the face of, you know, the various pressures that involved being in a brand new company like that.
How did they know that about you?
Well, I think probably the big thing was I had a prior military background. So when I graduated high school, instead of going into college, I went into the Army and served in the Ranger Battalion. Got out, went to school at University of Michigan, and while I was going to school, I stayed in the reserves. There was a special forces group just outside of Detroit. So I was comfortable working in high stress environments.
Can you think of one time where you might have melted, but you didn't, while you were with the Rangers or in the military?
In the military, there's a lot of times. Ranger school is probably the one. If you ask anyone who's been through it, they'll have some story. I can still remember. It's been 26 years, I think, since I was in Ranger school. And the whole idea is that you get put in an environment where they take away the things that make you comfortable. So that starts with food. They'll give you water, but sleep and shelter. Mm-hmm. So there was, I don't know, there was one time where I felt like I was going to melt, but it's definitely, you start to, when you haven't slept and you haven't eaten and you're tired, your brain starts to kind of play tricks on you. So,
Brian, your friends are all graduating from high school. You're graduating. They're going to go off to college, and you want to go off to become a Ranger? I mean, what was that thinking all about at the time?
Well, I was, to be honest with you, I didn't want to, I was glad to get out of high school. I felt, I went to very good high school, but it was just somewhat restricting. You know, there's only so much you can do. They have a certain set courses that they're going to offer. And I wanted to get out, and I was 18 years old. I was a young guy, wanted the sense of adventure, travel, challenges, things like that.
So you felt restricted by high school, though you joined the military.
Right.
Isn't that more restricting?
Well, a lot of people think that, but in many ways, there was a lot more freedom in there. And the freedom was that they were willing to give you responsibilities, some high-level responsibilities. Now, there was consequences that would go along with that if you didn't live up to those responsibilities. But I like that aspect. I like the challenge of it.
Let's go back to the beginning. What sort of freedom and responsibilities did Mom and Dad give you?
That's a great question, Mike. I think my parents did both, really. They gave. I have two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother. I'm right in the middle.
And you're from where?
Plymouth, Michigan is where I grew up. And so they were very good about letting us explore what we wanted to do. If we had an interest in something, they would encourage that interest and really support it, regardless of what it was. My three brothers and I were all involved in different things growing up.
Does that mean they were very permissive parents? Is that what you're saying?
No. If you knew my mom, you wouldn't even ask that question. But at the same time, our house grew. I grew up in a family, and not just my immediate family, but the extended family, where there was a very strong work ethic. We used to have things that we would call the work ends. My mom and dad had bought a new house, and my brothers and I, spent the weekend digging holes and putting sand down and putting trees in and moving bricks around and all that kind of stuff.
How did that feel, knowing most of your friends are probably playing?
It was fine. I probably griped about it a little bit at the time, but part of that is working with your brothers, you make jokes about it, and you end up in some kind of throwing bricks at each other fight or something like that. So
you feel like you have a strong work ethic today because of the result of your mom and dad?
Yeah, absolutely.
And was that the case through the military?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the thing that I've always enjoyed growing up had people who, strong work ethic, work hard. Being in the military, a lot of, high-functioning people that are all about whatever the mission is, accomplishing it, doing whatever you have to do to accomplish that mission. But, at the same time, and this is, I think, a misperception that people have about the military, particularly those who haven't been in, there's a large sense of caring there. Because when you're in a team environment, just like you're in a family or a close family, you have to take care of one another. And when you're in small combat unit and you're out there by yourself, there's not any other support line other than the people that you have with you. You have to rely and take care of each other.
You talked about the military gave you responsibility and then there was accountability. So how does that translate into your business today as a founder and building it, or does it?
Direct translation through this. First of all, I'm not a micromanager. I like to. My style of management is to define this is the result that I want, and let that person figure out what the best way is to achieve that. Because most often than not, if that person is the one who has more knowledge about whatever it is that they're doing than me, they're probably going to come up with a better solution than I might come up with. At the same time, you know, you have to have accountability so that if someone's not doing what they need to, you got to let them know that.
So let me ask you one more question on this point. You obviously was a hard worker growing up. That was a part of the family ethic, work ethic. And you're in the military. You have success there. You've built this company. But you talked about high school being kind of trapped in a box. And that just, can you explain a little bit more about that? What was going on in your life then that you felt that high school, you talked about the ceilings being low and very controlled environment?
Well, I don't know. I felt like there was more out there. I mean, when I was in high school, one of the things I did, I played in a band, right? Garage band, Warrior, in case any of you are still out there listening. And so I was always doing things outside of school. I just had other interests. So not being in high school frees up time to pursue those other interests.
When would you say that you went from being a young person or a child to an adult? And you went from that freedom to freedom, but with some responsibility.
Well, I would say it was... going in the military was clear. I mean, that's an easily definable moment for that. So, that probably was the best answer I could come up right now.
What about your childhood set you up for success for that later?
Again, I mean, I had excellent role models in not only my parents but my brothers and aunts and uncles. I have two brothers, Dave and Scott, who are very smart, sharp guys who have different skills that I always admired and continue to this day for different reasons. My father was an engineer, worked for Ford Motor Company, and so I was exposed to he and some of his friends. And I don't know, the engineer types are always about solving problems, right? So that's not surprising that would be kind of a tagline for a company that I have. And my mom worked in the healthcare profession, so that was always about taking care of people. So you saw that problem solving and compassion mixed together with you know, people who submit Western worth ethic.
So what do your mom and dad think of your success today?
Well, my father died probably about 18 years ago or so. My mom's very happy for me, obviously.
Is she surprised?
I don't think that she's surprised. I don't think so, no.
If your dad was alive, what do you think he would feel about your success?
I think he'd be pretty proud. I think he'd be happy to see that.
Why is that?
Because he always wanted his children to be successful. And he was someone who was always planning ahead. He was always someone who seemed like he had thought three or four steps down the road. So he and my mom spent a lot of time trying to give us opportunities to succeed and supporting us. So I think he'd like to see that it worked out that way.
What's the website for Segue Technologies, Ryan?
It's SegueTech.com, SegueTech.com.
Thank you, Brian. We've been speaking with Brian Calloway, the president and CEO of Segue Technologies. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Jim Corcoran. Jim is the president and CEO of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. Also, Katie Moran, who is the founder of
Federal News Radio Headlines, delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for
Mickey Williams. Mickey is the president and CEO of Cabrillo. And again, most recently, Brian Callahan, president and CEO of Segue Technology. I'd like to thank my hosts, Brian Biondi of League Asset Corporation, as well as Marion Egge of the Bank of America, for helping me develop the storylines, hopefully presenting to you an interesting and educational experience. I'd like to thank most of all you, the audience. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even have a radio show.
Mike, can I get a real quick thanks in here?
Yes.
I'd like to thank my partners, Ron Novak and Mike Bierman, and I'd also like to thank my biggest inspiration in my life, which are my kids, Clarice, Isabel, and Brady.
Good call. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Again, this is Mike Mannion. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio.
you can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green